From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a classroom 2 years ago. A music teacher was leading his students in an instrumental activity. He was using what's called the, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong, I'm going to do my best here, the Orff Skolwerk method, which combines music, movement, drama, speech, all into lessons so students feel free to play. People passing by the classroom could hear xylophones, recorders, and drums. They would see children dancing and moving to the beats. The method is especially effective for students who learn best by doing. But in 2020 and in 2021, the teacher's lesson plans had to be changed. His district went fully remote for the pandemic. He had to shift gears. Now his students were learning about music rather than making music. The teacher told friends and family that lecturing about composers or periods of music was not what he was used to, and he was eager to abandon the presentations and tests and get back to hearing students play the instruments. This is the story of a local music teacher, but the changes he made and the challenges he faced are understood by so many music teachers across the country. From remote learning to wearing masks during choir to playing instruments in plastic tents, teachers and students have had an uphill battle when it comes to music education. The challenges have led to a nationwide teacher shortage. According to the U.S. Department of Education, almost all 50 states reported shortages for teachers of all disciplines in the 2020 and 2021 school year. And as reported by CBS News, nearly 30% of National Education Association members say the pandemic has led them to leave the field earlier than expected. Throughout the last few months, we've been talking with teachers about the changes they've had to make, the challenges and successes they've had, and what they have learned that they want to continue to take forward as a result of this pandemic. We continue that conversation this hour with a focus on music education, maybe the biggest challenge for teachers during this pandemic. And our guests can talk a lot about that. Rachel Dobbs is music educator at the George Mather Forbes School. That's number 4 in the Rochester City School District. Rachel, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And welcome to Lisa Miller, chair of the music department and vocal director for grades 5 through 12 at the SOTA Central School District. Welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Lisa, biggest challenge of your career, has this been it?
Oh, boy, yeah. 24 years and being told that, you know, not only are you going to have your choir, but they're going to sit 12 feet apart. And then, okay, we can do that. And then they're going to wear masks. Okay. And then you're only going to have half of your choir one day. And while you're teaching half in an auditorium and, you know, you're hundreds of feet away from the furthest one, you're going to be teaching the other half on a computer screen. So you can't move very far. So it took, I mean, last year, 23 years of teaching, and I was like a first year teacher. You don't know what you're going to be doing, how every day was just something different. You know, you don't know, is the computer going to be working? Is software going to crash? Is Google going to crash? You know, attendance and what to expect. So, yes, very challenging.
And you're describing the most recent school year, right? You're not describing March, April, May in 2020, right? I mean, that was mostly fully remote for a lot of districts, and I don't know what you could do fully remote in that setting.
Yeah. So when March kicked in and as soon as school closed, immediately it was just nobody knew what to do. We didn't know how we were meeting. And again, choral and any kind of music, I didn't know software like I know now. So I can remember a couple weeks in finally meeting with one of my choir groups. And I'm like, I said, okay, we had a Google Meet. I said, let's try singing. And then I knew you couldn't do that. And it was very, I mean, within 30 seconds, we all just kind of stopped. It was very quiet. So yeah, very, very different. Very sad.
So I'm gonna reveal a little bit about myself here. The way that I figured out that you really can't blend voices on Zoom is pretty early in the pandemic. There were a lot of bands that were doing these videos of their stuff, and you know they were all in different places. And the Backstreet Boys had a pretty cool version of one of their old. Okay, look at you judging me. I'm mostly kidding. They're not judging. You're loving this. Come on. So the Backstreet Boys did a pandemic version of, I think it was I Want It That Way. And all of the guys are in their houses. One's got his kids there. They're goofing around. But it sounds awesome. And then I'm not singing I Want It That Way. I'm not singing Backstreet Boys, but, you know, an old buddy of mine in Ohio, I said, let's play a little. And we realized, you can't do that. How did they edit this together? Crowded House did a great version of one of their hits, a pandemic version. A lot of bands did, and it's very well edited. Hmm. I think Lin-Manuel Miranda and the group, they did some Hamilton stuff. Very slick. It doesn't work like that, I found out. And I imagine it was very quick that you found out it's not going to happen here.
No, very, very fast. And it was frustrating because, you know, we were planning for end of the year concerts back in March. You know, we luckily got to do our musical the weekend before. So we had that.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, so, I had this amazing senior class and we had all this end of the year senior music to do. And I'm going, OK, how am I going to do it? And I had nothing mm-hmm. as far as audio editing and just putting things together. So it was frustrating because I wanted to give them that opportunity, that final, you know, how do I do that? So big learning curve for us on software and on how to do that. Emailing, texting. I mean, the music community, that's the one thing. It's huge and supportive. And, you know, emailing other teachers in Wayne County. What are you doing? How are you doing this? And helping each other out. So,
by the way, is there any program that's been updated to allow two voices to blend together in real time over this? I don't think so, right?
No.
It's really rough.
No. We've tried. I mean, through Facebook, there's a ton of music educators sites and they've given things. But no, nothing has been able to work. So,
Well, let's hear the Rochester perspective. What was it like in March 2020? What changed?
Well, we didn't really know what to do. It was just so sudden. So learning how to be in touch with students and maintain contact. I know at my school, for that spring where we left, surprised, I would just join other people's Zooms to maintain contact with the kids. It wasn't much music activity. But then the last school year, we started remote and did half a year remote. So everyone was having their specials classes in that way. So then it was really time to add the music activities. And we had to be creative in really new ways that we were not used to.
How did it go?
It went okay. It's not something I want to do forever, but I was excited about some of the things that we came up with. We were able to do some whole school things that created a sense of community and allowed students to see each other with the help of some editing by my son in fifth grade. But the kids learned how to do these things. They learned how to use the technology. They got better at using the technology. So There were good things that happened. It wasn't the same. The level of joy was different, but we were able to make music.
When you talk about your fifth grade son helping edit, I mean, that's kind of one of the big lessons is live music is really tough to do when you're not together.
Yes.
Editing got to be pretty good. Are you pretty good with technology now?
Well... I can Zoom like a champ and post assignments.
And who wants to? I mean, I was saying that how difficult it is to get two voices to blend together on Zoom, let alone a choir or let alone an entire group or multiple instruments. The technology is just not built for that. Who knows? Maybe in the future that will happen. But what is it like now? What is the plan going forward here as students are coming back?
Well, we've spaced out our rooms. We're going to be sanitizing. We have to wear our masks, of course, but I'm looking forward to making music as much as possible because the whole year is going to be it's up in the air. Nobody knows really, are we going to stay in the whole time? Are we going to have to close down? Let's plan for the best and make the best of the time that we are in school.
What's the plan for you?
Well, at the end of last year, we were able to have a spring concert. So we left kind of a little bit on a high going, we did this. We were 6 feet apart. We were masked. We were in our auditorium. Parents were there. We had to limit the number.
The kids were singing with masks on?
We sang with full masks on. Yep. 50 kids, my concert choir, my select choir, every single high school group. with parents. I mean, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. It was amazing. And we hadn't had a concert since December 2019. So wow. It was pretty exciting. And it was good. It was happy to give the seniors something like that. So coming into this year, we're ready and, you know, we're ready to go. We're 3 feet apart. We're back in our classrooms. My students will be masked singing. Our band students have all the PPEs, so they've got little shields over their bells, and they'll be masked as well. But we have concerts ready to go, music's ready to go. It's pretty much, we're kind of running back to normal, just with masks and a little bit extra distance and just caution.
One of the things that came up in my mind early in the pandemic was the way that districts often, through well before the pandemic, when there are talks about budget cuts, sports and arts and music are often discussed as extra, as, well, we could cut this if we have to. And we've seen districts do it. And so when things are tough, if you can't do what you normally do, and if budgets are tighter and everybody's budget is tighter, I wondered how many art programs of various kinds would be in danger here. Can you both give me a sense for how you think your community values what you do, and if you ever felt like it was in danger at all, Lisa?
So SOTUS is a very small district, but we are incredibly supportive of the arts. Not only our school, our superintendent, but our community values it. We've got a very good music program. So with that, again, I've been at SOTUS. This is the start of my 24th year. I've been lucky and blessed that I have never felt that. We've, I think, done such a good job at keeping it important to the families and to our students. That's one of our shining lights at SOTUS. So they've been very supportive. I have not felt that yet. So we're lucky.
All 24 years in SOTUS?
All 24 years in SOTUS.
What's a typical graduating class? How many?
Anywhere between 70 to maybe 95, maybe 100 on a good year. So,
yeah. Small.
Yes.
Intimate.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone gets to know each other
yes,
pretty well.
Yes, very well.
Okay. And so you have felt supported. Do you feel that same way now going into this school year?
I do. Last year, something that happened was we were supposed to be cutting our 10th period classes. So kids were going to go home at 2:15. Well, my number one group is my select choir, and they meet 10th period. And we had a Zoom with our entire staff, K through 12. And our superintendent told us, you know, we're going to be cutting 10th period classes. And immediately my face dropped, and I may have cried. My superintendent saw me. And within the next day, my principal said, we're going to try to have so that you can have your select choir 10th period. And I was able to do that all of last year. Every Wednesday, they had busing for my kids to be able to go home on that. And that spoke volumes as to the support that I have there. And it's very, very uncommon. I am blessed. I was so grateful to my superintendent. And those kids, some of them, they were only there. So we had a hybrid model. So we had a purple and gold. Our purple kids were Monday and Wednesday. Our gold were Tuesday, Thursday. So my select met on Wednesday, which meant all the purple kids were in school. The gold kids, their parents had to bring them for the 2:15 to 2:55. And they came to every single rehearsal.
Amazing.
I don't think.
Amazing.
One kid. That's how important. And it was the only group that the entire, like the full group was there. All the other ones were hybrid and mixed.
No, it's amazing. And you know, last hour we had leaders in higher education, and they were talking at one point, a listener was asking, well, why are you doing athletics? Don't do athletics. Mm-hmm. And the president of Nazareth College said that for students who are into arts, students who are athletes, every student has something that motivates and drives them. Mm-hmm. And it's easy if you're not involved with that to just sort of dismiss it and say, that's not important. But when you talk about mental health, when you talk about isolation, when you talk about socialization, community building, and then just developing skills and talents and all of those things, it has been vital to find a way to keep doing as much of this as possible. So I imagine you know your students pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
For those who have a real burning desire to keep doing this, what was it like early in the pandemic when they couldn't?
It was hard. It was very, very sad. We have a lot of kids who just, I mean, the musical, they're in band, they're in choir, they're in select, they're in all of it. So, I mean, they were very vocal as to how frustrating it was, you know, not to be together as an entire band or an entire choir, and only, you know, for the band teacher, her instrumentation was all over the place, you know, so they were frustrated. They were sad. They were discouraged. So I think that's why a lot of us music teachers, you know, I know myself, I did everything to try to make it feel as normal as possible, to be energetic, to be, you know, encouraging, and to do a concert. I kept saying, we're going to have one. I don't know when, but I needed to give them that at the end. If not, you know, they had nothing to work towards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like sports, we practice because we want the games. Well, in music, we practice because we want the concerts. We want the performance. So without it, there was nothing at the end. And I needed to give that to them. And they got that.
When you are putting on a brave, positive face, you know, because you got to do it for them. Did you ever, you know, sort of unplug at the end of the day and just feel like you hit a wall?
Oh my gosh. I think I cried more times last year than I did as a first year teacher. I can remember going home to my husband going, I mean, the first month of this, I was exhausted. Like, it was a different exhaustion. And you're in front of a screen for so long that you're not. I mean, it's headaches, physical exhaustion, emotional exhaustion. Just, you're reinventing the wheel after 20-something years. And how do you do that? So lots of tears, lots of frustration, lots of, I don't think I can go on. And then after a couple months, I hit my stride. And I was like, okay, now I'm getting back to my norm. This is weird, but this is the new norm, you know, of how to go about doing this. And again, the kids were incredible. The kids were, you know, very helpful. I love that, you know, this day and age, they know more than me. So I'd sit there going, Google, how do I do this? Mrs. Miller, hey, you've got to go. And they'd come up and they'd show me. So, you know, it gave me an opportunity to sit back and have them teach me for once. And I think they liked that and appreciated it. And I needed it. So,
Rachel Dobbs, do you worry, or have you worried, that the arts, music, et cetera, is not going to be prioritized at some point and could be targeted?
Well, if you have followed Rochester City School District news over the long haul, you will know that we have had to fight for arts in the past. It does seem that in the past few administrations, we have been more supported and more valued. So it hasn't seemed so much like we're going to have to fight. However, that is something in mind. Like, we need to know that we are using our time to work with these kids and to produce things so that the value is seen. So I guess we do worry a little bit that we need to keep in the eye of what is, people need to see what we're doing so that they see it as valuable and will maintain it.
And they don't doubt it. And then all of a sudden, pandemic hits, everything's different. You don't know if you can perform. Did that come up in your mind at all, that, boy, you know, I don't want them to lose sight of the importance of this program?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Because there were, like Lisa said, there were forums online, and you can see what's going on around the whole country. Mm-hmm. And there were places where if you can't, we can't pay for you to be the music teacher because there's no, you can't do your job anyway. There were places, not here, that made cuts based on those things. So it was something that people were worried about.
Wow. And what about individual students? What was it like for you to sort of, because every program's got kids who are, you know, they're in it, they like it, but it's not, you know, maybe their parents asked them and they dig it, or, you know, their boyfriend or girlfriend told them they got to do it. And then there's kids who it is part of their core.
We were those kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's part of their core. And so what was it like for them?
I found that my students really sought out opportunities. The ones who really, it's in their soul, they were the first ones on our Zooms for choir. They were the ones who always came to our recorder Zooms. I had some students who started, it was like a little pandemic project. They were learning piano over, like, I would Zoom with them on Wednesday, our asynchronous day, and they would have a little piano lesson on a keyboard they had at their house. So I found that my students were really seeking out opportunities to be able to keep this going. And I was happy to help provide my side of it to make it work.
Wow. I'm sure that meant a lot to them, to their families, to the people around them. What about performance now? What does performance this school year look like for you?
I honestly don't know. At my school, our performances take place in the gym, the same place our assemblies take place, and I just don't imagine we're all going to be able to be in there together for those things, at the beginning anyway. We will be in school, and I'm hoping that we can have, maybe it will be something that we Zoom out, maybe it will be something that we do multiple performances and smaller groups of students come to see, because we perform for our school community.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully parents would be able to come. We're going to wait and see.
Maybe fewer big concerts or
smaller
performances.
Yeah.
Smaller performances. More performances, smaller. That makes sense to you, Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, right now we're planning for, I think, our regular concerts in our auditorium. If we were able to do it 6 feet apart last year, we should be okay. Our groups are bigger, though, this year because now we're, you know, back together. So, but as far as audience, that I think that's where it's going to vary. You know, only two parents can come versus grandparents and that. And that's where it gets a little tricky.
Yeah, I am curious to know if either one of you have lost any students for this process. Maybe the students were on the edges. I mean, are your numbers as strong as they usually are?
Well, I teach 5th through 12th grade. So I teach a 5th and 6th grade choir. So last year, that was non-existent. I didn't have 5th and 6th grade at all. So this year's 6th graders, the last time they had choir was 4th grade.
Yeah.
And they only got one concert. And then the new kids, 7th grade coming into middle school, they've never been in choir, you know, they haven't had that. So, we're back. I feel, for me, after building a program in that age rate, I feel like I'm back to square one of here we go. This is what we do. I've got to go out and sell and sell. And this is why singing and choir and band are exciting. So are we going to lose numbers? It's going to take a couple of years to really see what that's going to look like in that age range.
Are you concerned about it?
I am. Oh, for me, I'm very well. I like I tell everybody, I make or break my own program because I have 5th through 12th. So good thing is if they like me, if they like what we do, they stay in it. If not, it continues to affect through my high school program. So it, you know, yeah. So, you know, at the end of 1 year, I'm already thinking 3 years down the road. Who do I have? What am I doing? I take my kids, my 5th and 6th grade, I take to Seabreeze at the end of the year for a music festival. I take my middle school to Darien Lake. My high school, we go on trips. Why? Because it's about the music, but it's also about the extra things that they get. And they see that at the end of the year, and they're like, oh, we want to join this group to go and do that. So I'm already planning even more of that to try to retain kids, to try to bring them in. And once they get bit by the bug, then they typically are like, oh, hey, this is fun. But yeah.
Rachel, what about losing kids in Rochester at the school you teach at?
Well, so I'm the general music teacher. And like you said, if they like you and the things you do, they want to be with you for more.
Yeah.
And our groups like choir have been such a big thing in our school that I don't suspect I will lose much in choir. But we have a ukulele program at our school, and we have had recorder groups and things like that. That is where I expect I will see not necessarily a loss of students, but I'll be backtracking for the skill level. Because I have had students who have been in my ukulele group for years, and we were pretty high performing for elementary school. But now everyone is going to be starting from scratch. Kids didn't learn the basics in class. They didn't learn recorders in class because we couldn't do them. So it will be backing up skill-wise.
Yeah, talking about lessons that teachers have learned with Lisa Miller and Rachel Dubbs, who are music educators and many years of experience. I don't know if anything prepares you for the last 18 months, and that's what we're talking about. Because all throughout the summer on this program, we've talked to K-12 educators about the lessons they've learned from the pandemic. And when we come back from our only break of the hour, we're going to talk about the lessons that maybe they take forward now. Was there anything that was better for a music teacher? You know, inevitably for most teachers, everything was harder, but there were some nuggets of wisdom to take. I feel like most music teachers are just eager to get back to where they were for understandable reasons, but I am curious to know if there's anything that Lisa and Rachel would say that, you know, this is a lesson that I hadn't thought about before. This is what I want to take forward. We're also going to talk about how kids are responding to the various changes that they have to go through. Smaller performance sizes, we've been hearing about that. How are they dealing with masking? How are you dealing with all of the things that kids have to do to make sure we can keep going to school? So we'll do that on the other side of this only break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we bring you special programming for Labor Day. In our first hour, a program called The Uncertain Hour. It explores the origins of the federal minimum wage, why the law is written as broadly as it is, to whom it applies, and who it excludes. And you'll hear the story of one man's quest to fight back. In our second hour, it's Sacred Ground, a September 11th special from NPR. That's Monday.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I'm thinking of Mr. Benz and Mark Hansen and the many people who taught music to me over the years when I was growing up. I never appreciated them enough. You know, I didn't like that green sequin vest that I wore for show choir, but I wore it and I did the jazz hands. And I was never a great tap dancer. But I always benefited from the passion of the teachers. And Lisa Miller and Rachel Dobbs are here, and they are educators who have been talking to us about what they've had to go through as music teachers. They and their colleagues across the country and frankly around the world have had to deal with in the pandemic, trying to teach and trying to reach kids when you can't always be together in person. Now, this year, it's going to be a little bit more like a typical year, but there will be differences. You know, Lisa, you mentioned masking and you mentioned doing a performance mask. Generally speaking, how do kids do with masking?
You know what? Better than I think I thought, and what I, you know, I wasn't crazy about them. And I'm like, this is going to be miserable. I'm not going to be able to hear or understand. And I think a couple things it's taught me is, you know, they're able to overcome a lot. They did great. You could understand every word. We were able to buy the plastic inserts to kind of put over their masks. It helped with their speech. You know, we were able to work on diction, over enunciation, and they did it. So they did it. And it wasn't a big deal to them. They didn't complain very much about it. And to, again, be able to have a performance at the end with that, you know, one little hindrance, they were fine with it. So
who handles it better, the kids or their parents?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably the kids do. This year will be different, though, because I think, you know, they've had that 3 months of probably being unmasked.
Yeah.
And I think coming into September, it's going to be a little bit, just a little fight, a little different. I mean, even myself, I'd walk into work the last couple of days and I forget to put it on because I haven't had it on. So
yeah,
it'll be, we'll see.
Like sort of a readjustment period.
Yes. Yeah.
In some ways, this fall and this school year, you know, we are figuring out how to live with COVID. I mean, COVID is probably never going away. It's probably going to be endemic. Certainly the hope is it won't be as present and as destructive as it has been. This variant's tough, but if we can get it under decent control, then maybe we can figure out a way as a society to live with it among us and mitigate its effects. So I am curious to know if you feel like, is this kind of a stride into a future that says we acknowledge there's no COVID zero coming, but we are going to go to school, we are going to perform, there will be arts, there will be everything that goes along with that. Is that, how do you feel about that?
I think that's very true. I think our administration has made that pretty clear, you know, and all the schools just saying we're trying to get back to normal. We're at least, you know, you have to mask, but we are all coming back to school. We're opening on day one. We're trying to make, you know, come back to what we had before. So it's going to be here. Yeah, it's not going anywhere. So how are we going to deal with it? How is it going to look in the future for arts, for music, for singing? I'm hoping we don't always have to be masked. I mean, performing, you know, the face is a huge, huge component of expression for singing, and not having a part that hurts. But in the meantime, I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, the superintendent of Brighton School said on this program that he has no problem with a mask mandate. He wants to see off ramps. What is the metric that tells us we don't have to do this anymore? Is it a vaccination threshold in the community or in the school? Is it infection or hospitalization rates? Is it something that we can now look at and say, all right, here's what we're working towards. And once we get to this achievement, then we can pull back on some of the restrictions. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Yeah, it does. So, and I'm hoping we get there. You know, we've had teachers ask the same question of our super. When will we be able to take the masks off? I mean, that's been a big hot topic. You know, when can we do that? And he's like, I don't know. We've just got to wait, you know, till we're told.
How is vaccination going in your district?
We don't know. We're not allowed to ask. We're not allowed to talk about it. For me, I don't live in the community, so I don't know really what the numbers are.
Okay. Yeah. Are you curious?
I am a little bit, but again,
it's out of your control.
Huh? I like my job too much to ask. And yeah, so.
I gotcha. I will leave it there. Rachel, what about you? Let's talk about, first of all, how you think kids are handling some of these changes. How are they doing with masking? How are they doing with, you know, having to do things differently if they love it, but they can't perform in front of a big audience, that kind of a thing?
Well, masking wise, I think especially with the littler kids, they're like proud of their mask, or their main problem really is their tiny faces and their little bitty noses keeping masks fully covering them. But I don't think that it's not detrimental. They're doing okay. They're being flexible.
Kids are so resilient.
They really are. And they're used, like, the littler kids, well, I just need my mask. They know. What was the other part of your question?
Well, and then how about the older kids? And has that also affected them knowing that even if they can perform, you may not get the big crowds? Everything's going to be a little different, I think.
Yes. Yes. And I think they accept that. They know that. They're just glad to have an opportunity to.
That's good.
They like to do it for their friends who would be at school already. So even if we can't bring in an outside audience, they're still going to be performing.
Do you feel like there is that the changes that have been made, or at least the restrictions, are reasonable and are not permanent and are justified for the moment?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And I imagine we'll flex in and out of this just moving forward. There will be mask times and there'll be times we can relax it, and we have to just do what we have to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you concerned about vaccination uptake, that kind of thing?
Yes. Anecdotally, it seems that most of the people in my circle at school have been vaccinated. I know from them telling me. And I do live in Rochester, so I follow the numbers quite closely. But hopefully it just keeps going up.
Well, the big reason both of you are here is because too often the arts, music, gets left out of conversations about teaching. And what you are doing for kids is impacting them in ways that I think are, in some ways, just as important, in some ways more important than what they get. Not to denigrate any teaching, but I think it is so important. And I am very curious to know, I'll start with Rachel, if you feel that there is anything that you've taken out of the last 18 months and thought, you know, I never would have thought about X, Y, Z, but I want to take this forward with me. Or is it entirely a rush to get back to where you were in 2019?
It's definitely a rush to get back. but I think it has made, I'm not sure it revealed a new aspect of the teaching, but it did drive home how important these emotional connections are with students. And I think another thing about being a music teacher, like you said, you teach grades 5 through 12, Lisa, and my school is kindergarten to 6th grade. We were, for a number of years, kindergarten to 8th grade. So it's a very long-term relationship that you have with students. Mm-hmm. When when we had kindergarten to eighth grade, there came a point where I had taught kids every year from kindergarten through eighth grade. That's 9 years, mm-hmm. plus any siblings you may have had along the way. Those are very long-term relationships in a school building, and that's very important to the community that is built. So I think it's been emphasized in my mind how important those are, especially when we're going through difficult times.
I think that's really well said. School is a community. It is not just a series of grades that mm-hmm. that students get. Have you thought at all about, I mean, how you grade? Because this is the thing I'm most ignorant about with music teachers. You have all the power, right? You can decide whatever. is there less in the way of standardized testing? How do you go about deciding who gets what?
Who gets what?
Grades.
Oh, are you participating?
So it's pretty subjective. It's up to you.
Okay, it's not totally subjective. And it's definitely different at junior and senior mm-hmm. high. But it's at the elementary level, it surely is more observational. Like, are you participating? Yeah. Can you do the skills that we're working on? So it's meeting standards, but it's different. It's not, checking these boxes. Did you learn the math yeah. skills and the English? It is a different kind of system.
Well, to your point about going through hard times together as a community, students are going to be less worried about grades and maybe more thinking about all of the challenges or not seeing friends or, mm-hmm. or not seeing teachers. I don't know how much students at any age are going to pour their hearts out to you, but have you had moments where it is clear to you that this matters and this student needed this back in their lives?
Yes. And the thing that really, it was at the beginning when we had Wednesdays in the city school district. Wednesdays were the asynchronous days and there were office hours, and they posted the links and the time, and kids came just to be with you. Like, they came just to talk. They were home alone. They missed being in school. They didn't come because they had a question about the work they were supposed to do. They didn't come because of any reason except to talk to you and to see you. So I think kids do need it, and they recognize that, and they will do what they can to get that.
What did that mean to you to see students just showing up just to be there?
Well, I missed them, so I was glad. Any day that I got to, even a Zoom day, was better when I could see the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their little faces, or, it got to a point where kids would keep their cameras off. But I was still interacting with them. We were still communicating. And those days were always better than the days that were just meetings mm-hmm. and sitting through things. Any day where the kids were there was more meaningful.
Yeah. To Rachel's point about the camera being off, that's been sort of an interesting debate, even in the corporate world for work from home, in school settings. Can you make someone turn the camera on? Can you require that? And there's been some pushback over time. Where is your school and where are you on requiring? I don't know how you approach that.
Well, we were told that you cannot require a student to turn their camera on. But I would do things like, I just want to see your face. I just want to see that you're here. Let me see your face for a minute. Or I would, especially with my kids who are in fifth and sixth grade, I need to know that you're there. And kids would just flick their, the little microphone icon. You'd see that flicker. Or they would put something in the chat. I'm still here. I still knew they were participating even though I couldn't see them.
It's tough though, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
But that also sometimes had to do with like data usage, or yeah. their computer would be glitchy if they had the screen on. Mm-hmm. So some of it had to do with a technological aspect.
Yeah, I think there's something really beautiful about what Rachel's saying is that, maybe what you learned most is something that you already knew, but it just affirmed even more strongly, mm-hmm. the value of community and how much kids need that and what they benefit from. Lisa, what about you? Is there a lesson or two that you take from this experience?
Well, again, being feeling like an old horse doing this forever, you know, I was on automatic. And I think the use of technology was huge this year. I think I went about my rehearsals like I always did. I would teach the kids the music. This year taught them to be independent. I made a lot of recordings, used Audacity. We used something called Flipgrid, where the kids would submit recordings to me. I'm not saying they all loved it, but this was the first year I think I heard every kid individually all the time. And there were some diamonds, you know, that I found that I'm like, oh my gosh, you can sing, you know? And in choir, especially middle school kids, they don't sing in a group or won't do a solo. But with this, I was able to hear them using Google Classroom as much as I did. I teach a college level music theory class and use that more than I ever have. So going forward this year, again, not that I would, but there was so much technology that I used that helped my kids that I will continue to use it. And had it not been for a pandemic year, I don't think I would have done that. I don't think I would have learned. I would have just kept going on. So that's one of my
that's great. How wonderful is it when you hear that individual voice and you say, that is way better than I thought.
Oh my gosh. It was great. And I, you know, so many kids, I'm able to write comments. And what's great is that I'm the only one listening to them. It's not being played to the class. It's just a recording. They send it to me. And I mean, so many students I was able to go to and go, oh my gosh, I had no idea.
Do you ever say to a student, because I'm just going back to my own experience, maybe this is not accurate, but I assume that there are some leaders, some really talented kids who love it and have been doing it, and they're confident because they're really good. There's probably some kids who are surprised to find out they're great. I mean, did you ever have conversations where you say, did you know how good you are? Did you know you could do this?
Mm-hmm. I had one girl who I've had since fifth grade, and she was in choir. She's now going to be a sophomore, and she loves choir. She's a great kid, but just one of those that's been a part of choir. And when she submitted her first singing Flipgrid, I was like, wow, I didn't know. Her second one, I'm like, my goodness, they do these sight reading things. Mm-hmm. And finally, I approached her and I said, you can not only sing, you can sing well. And I said, do you want to be a part of my select choir, which is an audition group? And she was dumbfounded. And I don't think she would have ever even tried for the group. Didn't even know that she was potentially that good. And she's part of my select group, you know, doing solos now. I got an email from her mom going, oh my gosh, what you have done for my daughter. And again, these Flipgrids, if it wasn't for that, I think she would have stayed in choir and gone through her senior year just being fine, being a part of the choir and nothing else. So
what a cool story.
Yeah.
What a cool story.
Yeah.
Let me get some feedback from listeners. This is Frank in Greece on the phone. Hi, Frank.
Yes, hello. I was just going to say that study after study after study has shown that one of the best things you can do for a young mind is learn a musical instrument. It's good for the math. It's good for the language. It's good for the social skills. And it's settled science. That's why the Japanese work music training right in with their math training and their English language training, historical training. Core subject is music. And here in the United States, you know, the arts are the first thing to get cut. I'd like to know if your guest has any comment.
Well, yeah, we had brought that up, but I appreciate that point, and especially some of that world context, Frank. Let me start with Lisa. What do you think?
Again, I can only talk from my perspective and my district. You know, it has been very supported. I have seen, you know, other districts even in Wayne County that have been cut, but numbers are starting to come back as far as the teaching. You know, we've had a couple districts add some music teachers. Kids are realizing how important it is. And I think this year, you know, when it was it brought that out even more. Kids who didn't get a chance to do musical theater, oh my goodness, that was huge, losing that for us this year and for other districts. You know, that's just a totally different experience, even outside of band and choir. So I think districts are seeing how important that is.
Rachel, you want to address that as well, too?
Yes. So at my school, again, like Lisa said, I can speak from my perspective. I know that I've been trying to make sure, and my principal is very supportive. My school community is very supportive of the things we do. But to build these things in even for younger students. So outside of music class, having opportunities to learn the piano or be involved in other music groups, because not only does it strengthen those other areas, like Frank was saying, but just learning perseverance, and that you keep with something when it's hard and you don't give up, and you see the benefits of that. And I think that those things would translate to other aspects of what kids have to do academically. When it's hard, we don't give up. We keep practicing. The same skills that help you get better on an instrument or with a musical skill will help you when you have to do math that is difficult, when you have to keep working on reading that is hard, or writing. So I think that is true, and I know that in the city we are trying to build those things in for students. Mm.
And to Frank's point, thank you, Frank. To Frank's point, here's CT who emails to say, my son preferred adults to other kids and was a bit of a loner in high school. His principal thought maybe he would be trouble and should be sent to a BOCES program. By the way, there's nothing wrong with BOCES. I'm just reading CT's email. And he says his music teacher at York High School saw more in him and even went so far as to work with the administration to help him get an arts-based Regents degree because she thought he had a good voice. He is now a 3-octave tenor singing in the Chicago Symphony Orchestra Choir. Music does make a difference. Mm-hmm. The arts make a difference. Mm-hmm. That is from CT. That is wonderful. And the teacher is Deborah Young of York High School. So think about, that's one student. I'm sure that's a teacher who's impacted many, many students. And I have no doubt my two guests in studio have a long list of students who would say the same about them. And as we get ready to wrap, I want to go over a couple of other points here. So Val emailed the program and said, Evan, can the teachers describe who decides what music is performed? Real briefly here. I assume you decide, but...
Oh, yeah.
but do you get input from students? Has it changed over the years? What are you performing?
What are we performing? In class, I do try to do more popular music, what the kids are listening to. That's a good entry point. I listen to it first. yeah. Got to be sure. So yes, we do popular music. We do folk music. We try to be very culturally responsive mm-hmm. in the Rochester City School District. So music that resonates with our students, that maybe comes from different cultural backgrounds,
sure.
so that students can see themselves in the music we're doing.
I pick a lot of my music. However, I have lots of selections, and if I have students in my room, I'll say, listen to this. Which one do you like better? I try to let them pick. I show them J.W. Pepper's a big listening site. Mm-hmm. I say, go on there. If you see a song you like, and let me know. I'll listen to it and see if it's appropriate for our group. Again, I know our voicing, who we have, so and there's been lots of music that I've picked that students have given me. So it depends.
Do your students think that you're cool?
Of course they do. Yes, I try.
That is not even a good question. Yes. You come to Club Dobbs for music every week. I always know it's on a good day when kids line up to leave and they go, that was more fun than gym.
Wow.
Yeah, then you're stepping it up there. Our big thing is our music hallway. We have probably 15 to, you know, we've got a lot of kids who eat lunch with us, and that's always our big thing. They'd prefer to come and eat with us than to go into the cafeteria mm-hmm. and be with the other kids. That speaks volumes for us and what we're doing with them.
Well, in our last couple of minutes here, I would love to hear if you think, can you teach anybody to sing? And I say that because I have some friends who I think there's nothing, they were not savable. Like there's nothing that could have been done for them. I was never a great singer, but I sang a ton in college because I've got two brothers who are very musical and I wanted to be part of that sort of crowd. So I'm probably better than I was, but I never understood how to get better. Can you make somebody good?
You can make somebody better. That's always been my philosophy. And it's what they want to put into it as well.
But not everybody has the potential to get to the same level.
No, they won't. You know, and again, because I teach 5th through 12th grade, I've seen kids who in middle school, I'm like, dear Lord in heaven, you know, their voices are changing, especially boys. And I'm like, wow. And then by their senior year, just the fact that they're matching pitch and being able to stay on their part is a huge success. Like, where have you come from? Not are you going to be at the same caliber as the top music kid? You're not going to be there. You know, I'm not going to be able to dunk a basketball ever in my life, but can I throw one under my legs? Sure.
Okay, there you go. You want to address that too, Rachel?
It's very rare, the person who cannot sing, like super rare. You can help anyone get better. Yeah. And I would never, ever tell someone, I would never tell a kid, nope, you can't sing, you can't be in choir. Because how many adults, Lisa, have told you, my music teacher in 5th grade told me that I couldn't sing, so I just never sang another note. I'm never going to be that person. Everyone is welcome, and I'll work with you. Maybe to sing softer. But that is something, an opportunity that should be open to everyone.
I do wonder if you have parents who come to you with delusions of grandeur that their kids are better than they are.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. We all have.
How come my kid didn't have a solo? My kid's an amazing singer.
Yeah,
that happens?
But a lot of parents know. I mean, they just want their best for their kids, you know, so they want that opportunity to shine, you know, like every other kid. But, you know, I think it depends on the kid's personality, too. I think the bigger the kid's personality is, the bigger the parent's personality is to get them to be up there. So,
well, I think that's well said. And listen, I'm really glad that you were able to make time before the school year starts. You're back in, well, I mean, you've been working, of course, but you're welcoming students what day?
Wednesday.
Wednesday?
Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Yes.
Wow, that's tough.
Yes. I'll be at work tomorrow.
I'm grateful for what you do, and I know your students are and your communities are, because as Rachel Dobbs said earlier this hour, it's a lesson that everyone's learned in so many hard ways that the communities that we've built, whether it's in school, work, in our social structures, have really been strained. And when you learn a lesson the hard way, you hope you come out of it and you appreciate it even more. And I hope your students do. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rachel Dobbs is a music educator at the George Mather Forbes School, and that's number 4 in the Rochester City School District. Lisa Miller, chair of the music department and vocal director for grades 5 through 12 in SOTUS. And listeners, I hope if you love to sing, you do some great singing this weekend. But if it's like me, it'll be when you're alone in the car and nobody else can hear it. Rob Braden is the engineer. He's got a great voice for radio. Wish I had Rob's voice. Megan Mack, producer, Emma Ray Stein, production assistant, and I'm Evan Dawson. Have a beautiful weekend, and we will talk to you next week on Member Supported Public Radio.